Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. We have an expectation that people around us, our loved ones, our neighbors, I mean, we have an expectation, for example, that our neighbor is not going to fire a cannon into our living room. If we didn't have that expectation, it would be very difficult to sit down for a peaceful dinner. I mean, if you could not expect that the neighbor was not going to fire a cannon in your living room, it'd be hard to sit for dinner. If we didn't expect that our loved ones were going to still be in their beds in the morning when we woke up, that our house was still going to be standing, that the stock market won't have plummeted, that there won't be a huge earthquake or a huge fire, how could we fall asleep at night? If we don't have expectations of our family members, it's very difficult to trust. I mean, if I tell you a secret, if I say to Shefali, okay, I'm gonna tell you a secret because I love you and I trust you, I have to have an expectation that she's not gonna go out and print that on the cover of next week's Garvey Gujarat. Right? I mean, if I don't have that expectation, I'm not going to tell her my secret. So living in our lives, we have to have expectations. The problem is that simply having them does not guarantee that they're going to be fulfilled. There are some mornings we wake up and our loved ones are no longer there. There are mornings you wake up to discover that a loved one is sick or has passed away. If you've lived long enough, you've seen mornings where you wake up and discover that the stock market has plummeted. There are mornings we wake up to discover that there were tsunamis or fires or earthquakes, that the world was not what it was when we went to sleep. We get betrayed by our friends, betrayed by our family members, betrayed by our loved ones. But this is where how to deal with our unfulfilled expectations comes in. We have to have them. So we use that as the foundation. When our expectations are not fulfilled, that's the question. What do we do? How do we live? And this is how our spiritual practice serves us. We need to understand that the only thing we have control over in the world is ourselves. We have expectations of others simply because this is what we need to do in order to maintain relationships. If I marry you today, I have to have an expectation that you're going to be loyal to me. Or if not loyal, at least that you're not going to murder me in my sleep. Right? I mean, if I can't expect that you won't cheat on me, at least I have to expect that you're not going to, you know, stab me before morning. So there's some level of expectations we have to have. But along with having the expectations, we have to simultaneously have the awareness that we have no control over them. If I plan a picnic for next week, I plan it with an expectation that it won't rain. But I don't have any control over whether it rains or not. And what that means is that just as important as what we may expect in our relationships is our awareness that we have no control. And that an expectation is not the same as an entitlement. I may expect you not to cheat on me. Doesn't mean I'm entitled to you not cheating on me. I may expect that the sky doesn't fall, or that there's no earthquake, or that there's no fire. Doesn't mean I'm entitled to not having a fire. There's a whole universe. We spoke last night briefly about karma. There's a whole universe and all sorts of karma at play. So many different factors, so many different people that are all interwoven into a tapestry that we call the present moment. I don't have an entitlement to have my expectations fulfilled. And so what we need to hold on to is the knowledge that we have no control over anyone and anything except ourselves, which means that what our focus needs to be on is how do I handle it when my expectations are not fulfilled. And this is true whether my expectation is that my kid's going to clean up her room, my expectation that it's going to be sunny tomorrow, my expectation, whatever it is, when it doesn't happen, we act as though we have lost something within ourselves. And what that means is that I've taken who I am, my identity, my peace, my joy, my sense of self, and I have hooked it into what you do. You act the way I want you to act, I'm happy. You act the way I want you to act, I'm peaceful. You don't, I'm not. So what I have done is I have said to you, here is the rein of my life. Shake it a little, I'll dance. Pull it this way, I'll go this way. Pull it that way, I'll go this way. Do what I want you to do, I'm up. Don't do it, I'm down. And this is the problem. And this is where Pooja Swamiji's favorite and famous quotation of expectations are the mother of frustration comes in. Because we have so many expectations. And typically the expectations are based on just how I think the world should be. I expect you should act in the way that I want you to, that you should speak in the way I want you to. But that doesn't take into consideration who you are, what your karmic path is, what your dharma is. And this is where it's so important for each of us to recognize all I have control over is myself, and I'm going to hold on to the reins of my life. What that means is, yeah, I would love you to clean your room. I'd love you to make your bed. I'd love you not to tell my secrets. I'd love you to be loyal to me. I'd love you to act in this way. I'd love you to bring me flowers and chocolate. Be on time. Do what you say you're going to do. This is what we love, right? Tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me I'm wonderful. Tell me I'm the one. But I don't need you to. I have not taken who I am and latched it on to what you do. Because what that does is it sets me up for a life of disappointment. It means I'm only able to feel worthy, to feel happy, to feel peaceful, if my teachers or my employers or my friends give me a gold star, give me an A, tell me that what I did was wonderful, give me the raise, give me the promotion, give me whatever it is I'm looking for, then I feel worthy. And if not, I don't. And that's just cutting ourselves short. That's saying that somehow God has given you control over how I should feel. Think for a moment. Going back to my example of telling Shefali my secret that she publishes on the cover of Garvey Gujarat, right? Let's say I tell her something. Full trust. She publishes it. Now, who made the mistake? She did. She broke my trust. But if I'm miserable about it, who's suffering? Me. So what that means is she has made a mistake, and therefore I should suffer. Now this makes no sense whatsoever. Someone else has betrayed us. Someone else has cheated on us. Someone else has harmed us. Someone else has done what they shouldn't have done. And our reaction is, well, therefore, I'm going to suffer for it. We are not meant to suffer for the mistakes that other people make. Yes, of course, sure, it happens. We love people. Doesn't mean that we build walls between us. But what it means is we recognize that the mistake was made by someone else. And our own connection, our own peace, is not dependent on the outer world, is not dependent on what they do. Expectations and happiness within ourselves. So in addition to having expectations of the world outside, we also have expectations for our own selves. How I should act, how I should be. And when we don't fulfill those, obviously we also feel upset. But this becomes a slightly different situation, because where do we develop the expectations we have for ourselves? Many of us develop them based not necessarily on who we are, but who we think we should be. Or we have expectations for ourselves based on what society or the culture says we should be. So, for example, in India, one of the things that I share so frequently is an aspect of this culture that I find very difficult, which is the emphasis on the value of being fair-skinned. And the concept that somehow being fair-skinned is more beautiful than not being fair-skinned. And if you read the matrimonial advertisements, which I love to do, there's always... Yeah, in the newspaper, they have these matrimonial advertisements that when I sit on the train, I love to read. And it's always funny because I'm celibate, I'm a sannyasi, and people who don't know me will see, you know, me with the newspaper reading the matrimonials, and it looks a little funny. But I read them because I'm waiting to find a matrimonial that doesn't say fair-skinned beauty. And I have yet to find one. Now, every single person in this nation is not fair-skinned. There's a whole spectrum. Not every person in any nation is fair-skinned. Not everyone in Sweden is fair-skinned. But especially in India, there's a spectrum of colors. But if we have an expectation that says beauty is fair, all of those who are not as fair as they think they should be, who are not as fair as the photoshopped girls in the magazines or on billboards, what they feel is miserable. Now, that's not an expectation that they were born with. It's not even an expectation that comes from within. There's no internal sense that says fair is nicer than dark. And the reason I know that is in America, we think dark is nicer than fair. I mean, in America, everybody goes out to tanning salons to become darker. So there's no internal sense that says fair better than dark. This is culture. But if we have an expectation of that, it hurts us. And I use this example because it's easy to understand how this comes from outside. But so much of what we expect of ourselves also does. Not every one of us is an academic. Not every one of us is a professional. Not every one of us is good with accounting. Not every one of us is good at keeping lists and putting them into tables and doing spreadsheets. Not every one of us can dance or sing. Not every one of us can public speak or tell a joke without forgetting the punchline. Right? I mean, we all know there are some people who are fantastic joke tellers. And then you try to repeat it and you think, well, God, it was really funny when he said it. Like, everybody laughed then, why is nobody laughing now? Same joke. When we have expectations of ourselves that are given to us culturally, we're never gonna hit all of them. We cannot all fulfill all of the expectations that our culture tells us. It's especially hard for women these days, where really the expectation has become, and this isn't to downplay how difficult it is for men, but in much of the West, there's an expectation for women that you should be not only a fantastic and successful professional, but you should be also able to not need a nanny or a housekeeper. Like, what do you mean you need somebody to pick up your kids? Well, you're a CEO of a company because that's what you were told you should become. And so you're supposed to suddenly be able to manage being a professional, being a full-time parent, getting to yoga class every day, putting fresh cooked organic meals on the table, having time to read and write inspiring books. I mean, women, sadly, these days, and it hasn't always been true like this. It's not true in so many other cultures. There's so many cultures where being a mother, looking after the home, is considered not just what the women do and it's looked down upon, but it's actually considered something of crucial importance, something of great value. These days, it's a matter of an expectation to be able to do everything. And no one can do everything. And, oh, we're supposed to sleep 8 hours a night. And meditate. So the expectations we have of ourselves, it's really important to ask ourselves, is this real? I mean, is this really, really who I am? Or is this something that I have absorbed because the culture says I'm supposed to do this? Because the culture says that women who are professionals are of more value than women who have chosen to stay home with their kids, or vice versa. That women who stay home with their kids are of more value than women who go out. Whatever it is, it's very important for us to look at where did that expectation come from. Most of us aren't born with it. Most of us don't grow with it. When we're young and we're growing, the expectations that we have of ourselves tend to be much more just true. To be who we are, to speak the truth, to help others. I mean, this is the stuff that people do automatically. The rest of it is what we tend to have been indoctrinated into. And so it's very, very important for your expectations of yourself to be based on who you are. There is no cookie cutter that says academic better than artist, CEO better than musician. Sure, it's wonderful. The world needs professionals, the world needs academics, but the world also needs artists and musicians and chefs and so many other things. What the world needs, it's a beautiful quotation. I'm going to mess it up because I don't remember it exactly. But there's a beautiful quotation that says something like, don't ask what the world needs and become that. Rather, ask yourself, what makes you come alive and do that? Because what the world needs are people who are alive. And most of us instead focus on what we're told the world needs, what we're told we should do. My mother, I'll give you a personal story. My mother, when she graduated, after getting her master's in education, she wanted to go to the Peace Corps. She wanted to go and spend 2 years in the Peace Corps. Her father, my grandfather, wouldn't let her because he told her that if she did, all of the good men would be gone by the time she got back. Now, I share that story because, yeah, we laugh. I mean, it sounds crazy. But that's an example I know personally because it's my mother. But how many of us miss incredible chances in our life to really walk through a door that could open itself into who knows what direction to fulfill us? Because we're scared. Because it doesn't fulfill the expectation that we have put on ourselves. So the only thing we need to expect of ourselves is to be the fullest, the most sincere and complete version of who we are that we can. And to use every minute and every moment to unfold that. Through our work, yes, of course. I don't mean quit your job and go and sit on a beach and, you know. Through our duties, through what we're doing, through how we're living. Each of us has a different opportunity, a different way to serve. We've got a different present moment reality. Some of us have kids, some don't. Some have mortgages, some don't. Some have spouses, some don't. Some have parents who are living, whom we're taking care of, some don't. Some have disabilities, some don't. Some have a lot of disposable income, some don't. We all have very, very different present moment circumstances. But taking those circumstances, taking where you are, knowing that where you are right now is exactly where you're supposed to be. Exactly where you're supposed to be, and the reason that we know that's true is because you are here. And the universe doesn't make mistakes. So never waste a moment of your life. Never waste a moment trying to think about rewinding history. First of all, it's futile and you can't. Second of all, the universe doesn't make mistakes. Where you are right now is exactly where you're supposed to be. And the only expectation you should have of yourself is, how can I use who I am in this moment to allow myself to blossom internally in this situation. Because the prisons, the jails, the chains, the walls, the difficulty we have are never externally imposed. It's always internal. If I say to you right now, you cannot leave this room. Okay, now, you're all sitting here happily. Nobody was walking out the door. But the minute I say to you, you cannot leave this room, suddenly, what's everybody going to think about? Oh my God, I got to get out of this room. I've got to get out of this room. If I say to you, you cannot leave Rishikesh, that becomes the jail. It doesn't matter how small, how big our circumstances may be, how beautiful they may be, how wonderful they may be. It's all about how we think. This room is fantastic until you can't leave. It's not where we are. It's how we think about it. And what that means is that all of the chains, all of the jails, the cages that we feel in, the stuckness that we feel, the pain that we feel, we think it's external, but it's not. It's actually internal. It's how we are perceiving the external. And so allow yourself to be free on the inside. And what you'll find is that you've got unlimited freedom outside. And allow yourself to use whatever you have, whoever you are, for your own blossoming and unfolding into your freedom. And then that becomes your path on this planet. That is your dharma. It's not that, you know, people think sometimes that we've all come onto this earth with a stamp on us that says, you know, president of this company, or CEO, or mail clerk, or secretary, or that somehow our purpose is stamped onto us, and if I can just figure out how to see this thing on my back, then I'll know what I'm supposed to be doing. If I can just unearth this stamp that God put in the one place on my body I can't see, then I'll know what to do. But it's not that. We've all come stamped just with divine. That's the stamp we all have. Divine. And that's what we have to unearth. That's what we have to uncover. And you can do it just as well as a CEO, as a secretary, as a musician, as an artist. It's about who you are that's doing it. And yeah, of course, if you've got the opportunity to make a difference, to have an impact, use it. That's a special blessing. That's a special blessing. And allow the expectation that you have of yourself only be to use what you've got, who you are, the talents, the skills, the abilities, in as much service as you can. Never forgetting, though, that who you are isn't CEO, isn't secretary, isn't musician, isn't artist, isn't mailroom clerk, isn't fair or dark, but is divine. And those two expectations are the only ones that really matter. To remember that who I am is divine, and to use whatever I have, whatever I can do, whatever my opportunities and skills and abilities are, to make as much of a positive difference in the world as I can.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAIN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
So when you sense your ego calling the shots, how do we become free? Well, the first piece is awareness. Let's say that you and I go out together and we go to a bar and I've got a big jug of beer in front of me and but you've given up drinking, and I say to you, oh, have one. And you say, no, actually, you know, I've given up alcohol, I've started yoga. And I say, oh, come on, what are you, such a loser? Have a beer, come on. And then you say, no, you know, I'm really, really trying to maintain a higher state of consciousness. And I say, come on, what are you, weak? Now, sitting there with me, you may start to feel uncomfortable, but you're acutely aware of the fact that it's me sitting here on the opposite bar stool who's harassing you, right? You're very clear of what you want and what I'm trying to make you do. There's no confusion. You understand this voice is coming from that person sitting over there compared to this voice, which is coming from within you. When dealing with the ego, it's really important to get that kind of distance and to understand that just as we're clear that it's that crazy lady sitting in the other bar stool trying to make me drink alcohol, in the same way, this is my ego sitting there trying to make me act in accordance with its scripted drama. See, the ego has a scripted drama. The ego is like one of those crazy TV directors or crazy movie producers or directors where they've got a script. You're on the stage, but you're not doing your lines right. And they're just going by the lines of the script. You say something different and they throw a fit. What kind of actress are you? Can't you remember your lines? For God's sakes, you're supposed to say this, you're supposed to do that. Get off my set. So this is how the ego works. It's got a script. And the script for each of us is slightly different. But we've all got our stories, our dramas. The script is based on the dramas of our life. We're victims, we're perpetrators, we're worthy, we're worthless. Everybody loves us, everybody hates us. We're the most important person in the world, we're the stupidest, worst person in the world. We're light, we're dark. We've got our stories, and we've got our stories of how things should be. Here's how people should operate. Here's how they should speak. Here's how they should act. Particularly, here's how they should speak and act toward me. So the ego's got this script of the drama. And you are, until you become aware and conscious, essentially the employee of the ego. It's calling all the shots. Dance here, say this here, slap this one, hug that one, drink this. It's calling the shots. So that first step is the awareness that there is this existence within me, separate from my truth. Just like the crazy lady on the bar stool, just like the crazy director, trying to get me to say its lines. And the more emotional, psychological, spiritual distance you can create, in that space, you end up realizing you have a choice. Pooja Swamiji speaks frequently about the space between a thought and an action. So you say something to me. I get angry. My thought is, who the hell does she think she is? I'm going to show her. It's the thought. The action is to hit you, to say something mean, to whatever. There is actually a space between the thought and the action. Most of us don't realize that. We say, but I had to. I had to drink the alcohol, I had to smoke the cigarette, I had to eat the chocolate cake, I had to have sex with that person who I'm not married to, I had to, whatever it was. Had to, I had no choice. Well, what does it mean I had no choice? It means there was a desire, a thought form, a chemical and electrical pattern of activity in our brain. And we danced accordingly, but we didn't have to. There is a space. And so when you hear that call of the ego, this is where the practice of meditation is so beneficial. I mean, obviously the highest goal of meditation is to experience the divine in the self, in the world, in everything. But along the way, there's a lot of great benefits even before you get there. And one of the great benefits is mostly when we sit for meditation, we really try not to move. There's even some particular meditation practices where you're forbidden from moving. No, you can't change the cross of your legs. No, you can't scratch your nose. And while it may sound, you know, draconian on some levels, what it teaches you is, look, the body is screaming for me to scratch my nose. The body is screaming for me to change the cross of my leg. I didn't do it. And I'm still here. I haven't dissolved into nothingness. I haven't exploded. Because most of us think, oh my God, if I don't scratch that itch, literal or metaphoric, I'm going to die. Like, I had to eat the cake. I had to take the drugs. I had to have the sex. I had to do this. I had to do that, whatever our thing is. I had to have the temper tantrum. But as we sit in meditation, not responding to just the simplest urges, to change how you're sitting, to adjust the posture, to scratch the nose. As you don't respond and you realize, wow, I've continued to exist. I haven't exploded. I haven't died. That pattern of not reacting, or rather responding with choice. I have a choice. If I've got knee issues, hip issues, back issues, I may absolutely decide to change the cross of my legs because it could mean, you know, 6 months in a wheelchair if I don't. But I've got the choice. And that stays with us into our everyday life and our everyday reactions. And this is where the practice is so beneficial because it really teaches us, I used to do a very special personal meditation. And as it was going on, that was the time that the hips started burning. I could really enjoy the singing prayers for the first 30 or 35 minutes, and then by the time the lecture started, the hip was on fire. But I started this technique of, okay, well, I'm not understanding the lecture anyway. And I turned my awareness and my meditation onto the burning in my hip or my knee or whatever it was that was hurting that day, usually the hip. And I literally started talking to it. And I would say things like, is that all you got? Really? Like, that's the best you can do? Come on, I can take that. And I would sort of taunt it in this funny sort of way. And what I discovered was, the more I did that, actually the more the pain dissipated. Because half of pain is the emotional component. Only one part of pain is the actual physical component. The other part is the emotional component. Oh my God, my hip is going to be ruined forever. Oh my God, I'm going to need a hip replacement. Oh my God, I'll probably not be able to walk when I stand up from here. Oh my God. So that goes on. But the minute I turned it around, come on, give me your best shot. Get a little hotter. And I would play with it. And what that did was, it actually, in my life, ended up having this incredible impact of when I would find my ego or aspects of the ego, desire, fear, emotions, would start to rise. I had that habit of being able to turn around and look at it and say, oh, really? You want me to shout? Come on, how badly do you want me to shout? Or the ego would say something, oh, you want me to feel miserable? Come on, you gotta give me a little bit more than that for me to feel miserable. And what you realize is, wow, I can have all of these impulses, physical impulses, emotional impulses, and I cannot respond to them, not act according to what they want. And I don't actually dissolve into thin air. I don't actually explode. I don't actually die. And it gives you that choice. So as you find that the ego is calling the shots, turn around and look at it. Excuse me. Thank you. It's 5 o'clock. You can go home now. Punch your time clock on the way out. A sense of humor is a great, great ally on the psychological path and the spiritual path as well, because we're human. And we've got so many things, so many different arms of the ego. And if we feel miserable about it, then that just makes us even more a slave to the ego. But being able to kind of laugh at the self, A, you've got to really be able to see it in order to laugh at it. You can't make a joke about something if you're not able to see it. So you've got to clearly be able to see the self. And then you end up addressing it. And slowly, slowly, slowly what you find is, so I was saying that the ego is there. But it's not calling the shots. There's a power in you that's much stronger than the ego. That's able to say, no, I don't think so. Thanks for the advice. Thanks for the advice to scream at this person or hit that person or go to bed with that person or whatever. But I don't think so. It's not really in line with where I'm going. But thanks. Thanks for the advice. And that becomes the habit rather than it just calling the shots.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. How do you raise spiritual children? Well, the beautiful thing about children is, by nature, they're spiritual. And the question was a bit longer, but the crux was, how do you raise spiritual children? And she spoke about her children, one of whom is 9 and seeming to be very spiritual, and how can she support her child as a spiritual being? And the beautiful piece about this actually is that children by their nature are spiritual. We have to teach them to be materialistic. Look at what makes children happy. Right? What's the greatest joy that children have? Mother's arms, lying on their back and playing with their own toes, having you stare into their eyes, connection. You give them an expensive gift, they open it up, and what do you find so frequently with kids? They're more excited about the box the toy came in, the ribbon that was stuck on the box. I mean, we're the ones who have to say, no, no, no. That's not the present, silly. That's just the box. And we push the box away and thrust the shiny present at them. We have to teach them to be materialistic. We have to teach them that their toes are not the greatest source of joy, but rather, wouldn't you like this shiny new truck? Wouldn't you like this? So if you're a parent, and you have a child who you're able to see is still holding that spirituality, which ideally they all should. Fortunately, you don't have to do much. All you have to do is not push it out of them. Children come into this world so deeply connected to the universe. No child ever said, "You're black, I'm white. You're poor, I'm rich. I won't play with you. You're Christian, I'm Hindu. We can't play together. You're ugly, I'm pretty. We can't play." No child ever said that. We're the ones who say, no, 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 no. Don't play with him, play with him. You can't go to her house, you can only go to her house. They are different. We're the ones who take that spirituality out. So the way to raise spiritual children is to help them stay connected to what they've come into this world with, which is we're all one, which is love for the ant, love for the caterpillar. We had a beautiful program with His Holiness the Dalai Lama several years ago, and I was sitting just behind him, and I noticed every few minutes he keeps bending down to do something. What is His Holiness bending down for over and over again? And it turned out that he was bending down because there were little caterpillars on the stage.
And he was picking them up one by one and handing them to his security, who was standing. The stage was very high, and so his security was standing on the floor at the stage. And His Holiness would hand the caterpillar to his security to take it off the stage, because His Holiness was worried that someone should not step on the caterpillar on the stage. So we say, oh, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is so beautiful, amazing man, and he is. But one of the things that's so beautiful about him is that childlike connection. Children pick up caterpillars and save them, and we're the ones who say, no, 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 put it down. Now go wash your hands. So if they have that beautiful connection in them, that's connected to God, that's connected to spirit, that's connected to all of creation, further that, and just watch yourself. We always say it's for their good. It's in their best interest, but it's really not. That which we are trying to squeeze them into, these boxes of society, what we call socialization, it's not for their good, it's for our good. It makes it easier for us if our child acts just like everybody else. Makes it easier for us if our child behaves and looks and dresses just like everybody else. And so we're the ones who stick them into these boxes. So to raise spiritual children literally just means help them stay connected with what Pooja Swamiji calls that inner GPS that's really guiding them, that's guiding them in a much deeper way than the rules of socialization, that's really connecting them to the earth, to each other. And what you'll find is that raising spiritual children, if you don't have your agenda that they should become materialistic, is actually very easy. The only other last part of it is, as they grow, as they're more and more in school, as they're more and more with friends, with that culture, you're going to have to give them just a little bit of extra re-anchoring at home. School, the home is the first school. The home is where we really get the foundation for our life. But as they grow, as they get a little bit more indoctrinated by society, by their friends, by TV commercials, by the jingles, when they come home, we're going to just have to re-anchor them. And what anchors them is how we behave. You cannot raise spiritual children and then spend your life being a materialist. We cannot talk about why are our children not spiritual when we're the ones then, while they're sitting in the car, while they're in their room, saying, oh my God, did you see what she was wearing? My God, did he get fat? What is she doing with that haircut? What is she thinking? My God, she wore that same sari last week. Does she not have any other clothes? So we have these types of conversations. We have this type of gossip. And then we wonder what's gone wrong with our children. So it's very important for us to raise spiritual children. We have to raise our spiritual selves. I have a friend who's deeply spiritual and a very committed yogi and meditator. And when her daughter was about 5 or 6 one day, her mom walked in and the daughter was sitting at her mom's temple area. And the mom said something to her, and her daughter looked at her. She turned around and she said, shh, mom, can't you see I'm meditating? So she only knows that because she sees mom meditate. And so children pick up how we are and what we do. So the best way to raise a child who's spiritual is be spiritual. Same way that the best way to raise a child who's honest is be honest. To raise someone with integrity, have integrity. It's not a do as I say, not as I do teaching. It's do as I do.
because that's what they do anyway. We may think they'll do as we say, not as we do, but they don't. They absorb every minute of who we are and what we're doing. So to raise them, we raise ourselves. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.